and welcome to the Courtney Turner Radio Hour. This is airing Monday, April 8th, 2024. Hopefully we have all survived the eclipse, or I guess we're going to be seeing the eclipse. I'm going to put the video version of this episode up on CourtneyTurner.com. So I spell my name like Courtenay. It's CourtenayTurner.com. And you can find all of my podcasts there, all of my work there, and all the ways that you can support me and support my work there as well. I have a Give, Send, Go up there. I have Buy Me a Coffee. I also have just a Venmo. It's Courtney-Turner at Venmo. And then you can also send, if you prefer, old school snail mail. You can send support and letters there. That's 6041 Rural Plains Circle, Suite 110, number 106, Franklin, Tennessee, 37064. Again, that's 6041 Rural Plains Circle, Suite 110, number 106, Franklin, Tennessee, 37064. And I also have some great products that you can find all on my website, Magic Dicol, and my the Relaxasana, where you can get your discount, will be Quartz, C-O-U-R-T-Z, at all of them. Honey Colony, we just did an episode with Miriam, who's the founder. You can also add me to your crowd at CrowdRank. And, of course, Element is crowdrank.news/stack/CourtneyTurner. And, again, I spell my name like Courtenay, so it's C-O-U-R-T-E-N-A-Y. And Turner should be pretty easy, T-U-R-N-E-R. And the code for all of them is Quartz, C-O-U-R-T-Z. So for today's show, we're going to see how much we can get through. We've got a lot of material to cover. Those of you been tracking along with me, you know, I've been doing a lot of work on Tavistock. This is kind of a passion topic of mine because I think they really are kind of the premier brainwashing institute of the world, a shadow think tank. Fortunately, more people do know about them today than previously. I think thankfully to the lawsuit with the transgender clinic, and they got shut down back in 2022. So I think that helped really sound the alarms. A lot more people are awake and aware of who they are and what they're doing today. As we touched on last week, you know, now if you go to their website, they're really not hiding a whole lot. They're actually calling it an awakening organization. They are saying that they are recruiting Gnostic Reticulus. So, you know, when I get into what they are doing today, I will, I'm going to do an episode on that, but I will talk more about what that means. But essentially, you know, it seems that they are really trying to, they're trying to cast a nut. A net. Reticulous in a political sense is kind of like the organizers, who the architects who create these constructs for the movements. And that's very much what it looks like they are trying to do. So for today's topic, we are going to talk about very much what I think is helping to construct an architect. The Gnostic Reticulous. This is your time. I think what is really helping to bring in the New World Order through these corporate fascist technocratic takeover. And it is really being done through what is called sensitivity training. And ultimately, I think I talked about this last time as well, but it bears repeating because it is so incredibly important that people understand what their plans are. But they are planning to create an AI world society. So it's literally like it looks like Cyber Satan, but it is literally an AI world, like the metaverse, that we are in a digital prison. And this is their plans. And this is not speculation. This is part of the UN 100. So this is imagining the UN in 100 years centennial. So it's called the UN 100. They're imagining it at 2045, what the world will be like. And it will be run by an AI world society. They're talking about making, this is done in conjunction with the Boston Global Forum. The book is called Remaking the World, The Age of Global Enlightenment. And it is written by Michael Dukakis, who was the former governor of Massachusetts. Some of you may remember. And they are talking about creating this AI world It's a digital world where they talk about having Ukraine. They did a whole symposium on this, actually, where Ukraine is going to be the hub of this AI world society. And then it will be connected to all of these other little smart cities, 15-minute cities, C40 cities. And they will be connected as a grid all throughout the world. They talk about us being objects in this. They talk about humans being digital citizens, and we will have digital twins. There will be AI citizens. And I bring all this up to say, because they need to condition us to opt into this. And I think this sensitivity training is a huge conduit for it, because it started out where we're going to go through what it is and how it began and the roots of it. I don't think I'll get quite up to today and what they're doing with it now. But for you to know what they're doing with it now, this is where all these things like DEI and ESG come from. And of course, they're pushing them all through the corporate infrastructure. And they actually had to rename DEI because they got so much pushback. And which is, a good sign, this happens, but then they just rebrand and they repackage and they rename things, right? And I was actually at, it was a C-suite event with a lot of kind of corporate, organizations. And they were talking about how people were not buying into DEI and they were really struggling with the branding. They just couldn't get people to, jump on board, and they weren't really understanding how important it was and how wonderful it was. And so they had come up with something, and now it's been, this was actually discussed as a proposal when I was there. And now they're calling it Bridge. And let's see if I have the site for what Bridge stands for. So it's benchmarking race, inclusion, and diversity in global engagement. So that is what they're calling it now. But this is social impact that's doing this. So they've renamed it, they've rebranded it. And this is very typical. This is what they do. So for you to understand that this is what, this all comes out of sensitivity training that comes out of Tavistock. So, and this is, it's all being pushed through corporations. And I think the corporations, just for you to get a little vision of, where they're going. And right, I always talk about the Fabian socialists and how they're masters of incrementalism, right? Remember, their mascot is the tortoise, right? Slow and steady wins the race. And that's after their model of incrementalism, their strategy and their tactic. And of course, their coat of arms is the wolf in sheep's clothing. And I think that signifies a nod to the Hegelian dialectical tactics that they weaponize. They use this. So I want you to get this plan, because it's really, as Dr. John Coleman would call it, like a long range penetration with interdirectional conditioning. And that's a good way to think of it. That really is what they do. So right now we're really seeing this huge, like, supranational entities, which are these corporations, right? They're international, they're supranational. And I think what the purpose of that is to pave the way where the corporations are really going to be the governing authorities. They want to, and the elites have talked about this. This is in their white paper documents. This is in the texts of the architects of the future, the futurists. So people like Brzezinski and Kissinger talks about this, where there will be a dissolution of nation states. And that, I think that's a huge reason, one of the key reasons they really target America, because it is very much a sovereign nation. And we have, very strong founding documents and principles that, are a bulwark against the dissolution of American principles and America as a sovereign entity. And what I think their plan is to do that, and it's not my guesstimation, it's not speculation, they've said that these are their plan. And they want to have remnants of power blocks, but really to a dissolution of these borders. And something like the UN is kind of what they're modeling, but, much more of a, not the UN, the EU, where it's you have these centralized maybe power blocks, but you don't really have the same kind of, in Europe, you still have nation states, but something much closer to that is what they want on a global scale. And I think one of the things they're thinking is that they'll have these corporations that really take power, and you're already seeing that. So much of the policies, COVID was a really good example of this. You know, people who were in corporate America were much more susceptible and vulnerable to a lot of these policies. And people who, you know, maybe worked from home, people who were entrepreneurs, had a lot more autonomy. And so you're seeing this, is this stuff gets pushed down from a supranational, because it was corporations that may not have just been American or a state corporation. They were international corporations. And so a lot of these policies were coming from, you know, even above a federal apparatus. And I think the goal is to get us accustomed to that and have that infrastructure in place. And then really where they're going to go with it next is this AI governing body. And they've talked about this. They've already developed an AI Bill of Rights. They're already talking about how that will be, there will no longer be human governments, human-run governments. It will be run by AI. So these are really the plans. And I think it's important that we understand, you know, what, where they want to go. This doesn't mean that it's inevitable. It doesn't mean that we can't derail them or at least slow them down. That is my hope in sharing this information, that maybe we can put up some sort of a defense. But if we can't defeat an enemy we don't know exists. So that is why I try to bring awareness to these sorts of things. And that's my hope, is that people will stand up against it. But that, I think, is the plan. I think that's where they're trying to go. And I think these are the kind of the incremental steps that they're trying to take in order to get us there. And of course, driving this AI world society is the UN, right? So the UN has, it's the UN 100 that's doing this. And it is the UN that's being guided by the Lucius Trust. And that is their spiritual underpinnings. And they've made that very clear. It's their consultancy. It does seem like they have this vision for a one world religion. They've talked about, there's like the world governing religions. This started back in 1893. And then they had in 1993, on the centennial, again, they're big on their centennials. They had a whole conference on it. And it was the, you know, and it was, I think it was led by Robert Mueller. And he was talking about how proud he was that, you know, his contribution was that we should all have, that there should basically be a one world religion. That's the gist of it. But that's for another day. We can talk about that another time. But if you're watching, you can go to the website, you know, it's Lucius Trust, and they talk about it. I did do an episode on this. If you want to learn more about Lucius Trust, you can go back. It was Black Money Magic and the New World Order was the title, I believe. So let's get into this. This is, what is sensitivity training? So according to Senator John G. Smith, the definition of sensitivity training is defined as group meetings, large or small, to discuss publicly intimate and personal matters and opinions, values, or beliefs and or emotions and feelings towards one another in the group using techniques of self-confession and mutual criticism. Also, coercive persuasion in the form of thought reform or brainwashing. And that is a direct quote. And that latter part, the part where it says coercive persuasion in the form of thought reform or brainwashing, actually comes out of page 47 of the National Training Labs manual. It is their, what is it called? Issue and Training. And this was in 1962. So that is their direct quote. They actually call it brainwashing. And I'm going to later read you a document from the CIA that refers to it as that as well. But before I do, let's look at some other definitions of sensitivity training. According to Britannica, sensitivity training refers to one of the organizational development techniques, which through counseling methods works on increasing employee well-being, self-awareness of an individual's own prejudices, own prejudice and sensitivity to others. Members of different gender, culture, and abilities are brought together in a free and open environment in which participants discuss different issues in an interactive way. So you can see here, this is organizational development, organizational psychology. All of this comes out of sensitivity training. So here's a book. It's the National Training Lab's Handbook of Organizational Development and Change. They were actually the ones who came up with the concept of change agents for politics, for organizations, companies. It's called Organizational Development and Strategies and Models. They wrote a lot of books. I always recommend people go to the original source. Usually you can find commentary books or secondary sources, but I really recommend people read from the horse's mouth whenever possible. You will get the most information that way and the most clearest understanding of what it is they are doing. I almost went into a master's program at Columbia for organizational development. Now in hindsight, I'm kind of glad I didn't because it's through corporate America, not just America. I think, really just through these international corporations that I think they're building out this infrastructure for the New World Order because they can push all of these woke kind of policies through the corporation, through what they call stakeholder capitalism, right? And it would be much harder to do if you had a more autonomous, smaller, mom and pop businesses or really just any kind of entity that is sovereign. And this is why they have to destroy things like the family, the church, right? The five pillars, the church, education, everything has to become centralized. And their goal is to have it become centralized worldwide. So it's not just, through the federal apparatus, which they're doing a really good job of. They're pretty close to that already. As you've seen my videos on education and the history of education, we are, in big trouble there. So they've already had a lot of success. I think the next thing, let's play a video. G. Edward Griffin, who is amazing. He was my 300th episode, and he is really just like the OG red pill guy. Brilliant, and he has done tremendous work to wake people up from so long ago. It was a cartoon on sensitivity training. I believe this was back in 1969. So this has been, a long time. And 1969 seemed to have been a really big year with all of this sensitivity training stuff going on. The 60s, the counterculture movement, you had EST and you had Esalen and the whole human potential movement. This all comes out of sensitivity training. So this is the evolution of sensitivity training. So I'm going to play, the whole video is half an hour. I highly recommend you listen to it. He really breaks it down very well, but we'll listen to, I think it's about 12 minutes of it.
Main ingredients of sensitivity training are self-criticism and self-confession of personal feelings and behavior. Auto-criticism is aimed at changing individual behavioral patterns. In other words, moral concepts. Or, in the words of the National Training Laboratories and the National Education Association, it is called thought reform, or brainwashing. Feelings are stressed almost exclusively, and reason and logic are ignored for sexual, emotional, and animalistic type responses. Sensitivity training strives to create a gut emotion over mind. To do this, a psychodrama is sometimes used so the participants can act out their roles of parent, hummingbird, cat, or whatever the group might wish him or her to be. To further heighten the anti-intellectual, emotion-over-mind response, self-awareness is used. Feeling therapy, mood therapy, marathon therapy, new bathing, and other group remedies are prescribed as a cure for all of society's ills. One of these emotional binges is called under the blanket, where participants are told to go under the blanket and remain quiet for 5 minutes. Then, without talking, they are to encounter one another. They are instructed to allow their desires to run rampant and let natural actions or reactions occur. History has recorded that there have been two kinds of people in this world, the good guys and the bad guys, just as anyone who's ever seen a great B Hollywood movie knows. The bad guys are always looking for ways to destroy the good guys. Throughout history, they have hatched rotten plots to carry out their devious means. Whether it involves spiking someone's drink or taking advantage of a handicap, the bad guys don't care whose toes they step on in their selfish quest for power. Their target always has been, and always will be, naive youth. One of the tricks the forces of evil use is called the new morality game, devised by the self-proclaimed intellectual elite. This game works by telling young people that they are the most intelligent generation in the history of mankind, thus creating a generation gap. Hypnotic music creates an atmosphere where the unwary can be tempted to indulge themselves. The most important thing is to get this generation to be pleasure seekers. The youngsters may rebel at first because of the puritanical ethic of their middle-class upbringing. But if you get them to take that first one, the rest comes easy. And for the more naive, there are those strange-smelling cigarettes from below the border. Once you've got the youngster high, they will seek these kinds of experiences at every opportunity, creating a generation which is pleasure-bent, self-indulgent, or, as Dr. Timothy Leary says, a hedonistic society. This theme being promoted as the new morality over and over in the press, in the movies, on radio, on television, is designed to place a whole generation on one big orgy. And when they've indulged themselves to capacity, the bad guys will sock it to them. But this time, the villains aren't going to settle for the heroin or a mortgage on the modest cottage. They're after real money and in power. How far has this devious plot gone in this country? One wonders at some of the things going on around us. The increase of the use of narcotics in this country has alarmed many people. Sexual promiscuity, with a corresponding rise of venereal diseases, has been a cause for grave concern. And you can understand why when you see this baby born with syphilis. Racial tension has caused alarm. Who can forget the specter of Detroit and Watts? America is a problem-solving nation, accustomed to solving problems with immediate solutions. And the answer being presented today to all of these alarming problems facing our nation is sensitivity training. The cry comes up, is this just one more devious plot by the forces of evil to destroy good? Or is this the first step to a world of peace and utopia? Yeah. Let's look at the facts. Sensitivity training has its roots in the conditioning experiments conducted by Ivan Pavlov, the Russian physiologist. Pavlov's famous experiments demonstrated how dogs were conditioned to salivate when a light was flashed on. What is less known is that Pavlov conducted the same kind of experiments with human beings, showing that human behavior could also be conditioned. The Russian communists found an immediate political use for this new scientific knowledge. They used Pavlov's conditioning principles as a means to control the mass. Through Bolshevik self-criticism, we will enforce the dictatorship of the proletariat, was the cry of the Communist Party. Americans learned just how well this communist technique worked during the Korean War. Never in the history of the United States military service has there been such a breakdown among captured prisoners. Major William E. Mayer, a medical doctor and psychiatrist for the Army who was responsible for interviewing Korean prisoners upon their return, states, "The Chinese couldn't have cared less what you talked about, really. It was the function of talking, because very rapidly other soldiers began to stop smiling and start listening. Very rapidly, the soldier who was talking got the feeling that he had gone too far. He had exposed himself too much. So, when 10 men would walk out of a self-criticism group, they would walk out in 10 separate directions, divided like sticks in the Old Testament that you can break so easily when they are apart, but are so strong if they are together. After these well minds were made sick, the Red Chinese were able to have as few as 6 men guard 600 American prisoners. For the first time, the U.S. fighting man did not try to escape his capture, and 30%, rather than face this bewildering experience, simply rolled over and died. If the Germans had used the same principle during World War II, there would be no such program as Hogan's Heroes on television. The loyalty and cooperation, the will to win that makes up the plot of the Saturday night television show was completely destroyed in Korea by the Red Chinese version of sensitivity training. The few Hogan's Heroes of Korea, those fighting men who had strong religious or moral convictions, were called hopeless reactionaries by the Chinese and were separated from the others and placed under heavy guard. Sensitivity training goes by many different names. Group dynamics, youth counseling, social engineering, encounter, self-evaluation, human potential workshops, human relations lab, the games people play, group analysis, T-group training, attack-in, interpersonal relations, management development, all are names for sensitivity training or brainwashing. Sensitivity training should never be confused with group therapy, which utilizes the strength of group interaction to help the individual rise above his problems. A good example of this beneficial therapy is the success of Alcoholics Anonymous. Ideally, this form of group therapy strengthens the individual and reinforces the convictions he already holds. This is why group therapy was popular in business and industry for leadership training, although this type of therapy is rapidly declining. Sensitivity training, or brainwashing, however, uses the group to criticize the individual's convictions and undermines them, if possible. In such a manner, it is possible through sensitivity training to subvert respect for parental authority, loyalty to country, religious and moral convictions, and the worth of the individual in making his own decisions. The present home base for sensitivity training in this country is the Esalen Institute in Big Sur, California, where group confession, self-awareness, touching, crawling in piles, nude marathons, shoulder dances, and other such programs are advocated as the answer to all of society's ills. Esalen would tax the imagination of even the most creative Hollywood writer. The intrigue involved with a strange mixture of government financing and Ford Foundation financing, to mention two, and the related endeavors with publishers of pornography, radical leftist groups, the Peace Corps, elementary and high schools, colleges, churches, and the Sexual Freedom League would amount to an endless supply of plots devious enough for Alfred Hitchcock. To the majority of American people, it's almost impossible to think that some behavioral scientists, psychiatrists, marriage counselors, psychologists, and clergymen really take these programs at Esalen seriously. But, as the old cliche goes, there is a method to their madness. That method is to convince the naive that they are nothing more than animals, to encourage the young and gullible to be over-aware of sensual feelings, and to create an animalistic response of self-indulgence. Noted authority Dr. Hardin B. Jones, professor of physiology and medical physics at the University of California, tells us that sensitivity training leads to an animalistic mob response. Jones calls sensitivity training a powerful form of Pavlovian conditioning, conditioning by which sexual and emotional types of response can be substituted for intellectual consideration. To understand why this is so important, let's use an example. Imagine yourself driving to work or to school. You're approaching an intersection and the light is red. Automatically, without thinking, you see the red light and your foot goes for the brake pedal. Your response is a conditioned reflex. Remember Pavlov and his dog experiments? Now, let's imagine the same situation. Only you reach the corner and the stop signal is out. You will react in one of two ways. If you're a sensible human being with the ability to reason, you would do the sensible thing. You would automatically step on the brake and come to a stop. But if you've been conditioned to have true animalistic response, you will keep your foot on the gas and try to go on through the intersection. How you respond in this situation depends on whether your subconscious alliance is to the Judeo-Christian ethic of the Ten Commandments and the Golden Rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you, or whether you will subconsciously revert to animalistic self-indulgence and self-consumption. Why is this so important? Because if you subscribe to the Golden Rule, you will stop, wait your turn, and allow one another to pass in comparative order. The traffic situation will resolve itself. But if you respond as an animal, concerned only with self, and others are the same way, you will all charge into the intersection at the same time, creating chaos. And the only thing that can clear the streets and regain order is, of course, the policeman, or the police state. We have not yet reached the point where all will be chaos when the stoplights go out. But how much longer will it be before a majority is conditioned to believe that the self should replace the Almighty? Sensitivity training seeks to destroy the self-restrained individual man and replace this with the animalistic, self-indulgent response of the group. Thanks to the ability to communicate on a mass scale, fads can sweep this country at an alarming rate. And sensitivity training has been enjoying the Madison Avenue cure-all promotion that would have put medicine into shame. Business jumped on the bandwagon to create the corporation man, but the PhDs, behavioral scientists, psychologists, and psychiatrists met their match in the profit and loss sheet. Business has taken another look at sensitivity training and all its aliases. A recent article in the Wall Street Journal bears this out with their headline, "More Harm Than Good in Sensitivity Training." One example the article brings out tells about the executive who went to Esalen on his own hook and became so deeply affected by the experience that he quit his job. For a while, he worked as a dishwasher at Esalen. The article goes on to tell about another example, subheadlined, "An Executive Breaks Down." We quit. And now and then, a participant in sensitivity training will crack under the barrage of personal criticism and analysis. One big company in the Midwest stopped all sensitivity training after a vice president suffered a total breakdown during a session and had to enter a mental hospital. Fear of damage to the mental health of employees has taken other firms out of sensitivity training. Sensitivity, regardless of its obvious danger, is being promoted as the immediate solution to the alarming drug problem in the United States.
Wow. Yeah. So as I had mentioned, that was, you know, just the first part. It goes on for, I think it's a full half hour. So if you want to check that out, that's G. Edward Griffin and his, it's like a cartoon that he is narrating, talking about sensitivity training. And I think he does a really good job. That's really what it is. So how does this start? I like to go back to kind of the origins as much as we can. And it seems like it starts with a man named Jacob Levy Moreno. He's kind of the father of sensitivity training, if you will. He was an editor of an expressionist magazine. And he talked about like a religion of the encounter. So this is where we get the term like encounter training, which there's many names, as he mentioned some of them. There's T training, which was sometimes called training for normals. Maybe that's where that term normie comes from. I don't know. There's the T training, there's encounters, there's later there was the EST, and there's the Esalen. There's all different names for them, but essentially it's all the same thing. They may have slight nuanced differences, but it's very much the same. But the religion of the encounter was a philosophy premised upon a spiritual faith in the transcendent possibilities of authentic face-to-face human contact. And he distinguished his approach from Freudianism that was popular at that time by advocating acting in the place of psychoanalytic talking. So this is where we get, it's really all about like being in the moment, right? It's kind of like if any of you are familiar with acting techniques, it's, kind of like Meisner versus, the Method or Stella Adler. And it's all about moment-to-moment work. And they were using this for, it was called psychodrama. And so this was where you get this improv methodology of acting out. So like he was saying, the blanket exercise or these nude marathons. And, some of these trainings, they would do things, they call it a stretch, where they would have like basically dare people to do things really extreme in order to face their fears. And, it's really about blurring and stripping you of your identity through criticism. China, Maoist China, these would be called like struggle sessions. This would be where people would engage in what they called auto critique, because the struggle sessions were so horrific that people didn't even need to go through that in order to, quote unquote, reform the thought reform agenda. They would, which is really brainwashing, right? They would engage in their own autocritique, and they would self-critique and censor themselves. Moreno's idiosyncratic mystical philosophy can best be conveyed through the poem in 1914. So that 1913, 1914, we talked about the Wellington House last time. It was around that same time. Of course, that's a Federal Reserve Act. And, we have all sorts of great things in that year. But he said that it was the, quote unquote, prayer of his psychodramatic method. And I'll read you this poem. "A meeting of two, eye to eye, face to face, and when you are near, I will tear your eyes out and place them instead of mine, and you will tear my eyes out and will place them instead of yours, and then I will look at you with your eyes, and you will look at me with mine." So this is kind of the forerunner for the role-playing aspect of these the sensitivity training. And we might call it improv. And what the argument was, that it can be made to be the crucial experts and investigators of any social setting in which they are part. So essentially change agents, right? That's another way of saying that would be pivotal to the sensitivity training methods that he exported to the United States. And then I would say probably the next one from there would be Wilfred Bion. He spent 7 years training at the Tavistock Clinic. This is before it became the Tavistock Institute of Human Relations, with the Tavistock Clinic. We talked about that last week. So if you don't remember, I would recommend going back and listening to that episode that I did. And he pioneered his work in group dynamics associated with Tavistock Group. And you can see that in his papers in 1940, he did a whole bunch of papers, and they were later compiled in 1961 in his influential book. It was called Experiences in Groups and Other Papers. And it was an exploration of the processes set off by the complex experiences of being in a group. So really just exploring what it means to be part of a group and how people interact and engage, and, you know, what happens to human behavior in a group versus the individual. It became the touchstone of work for applications of group theory in a wide variety of fields. And his Tavistock method in group influence groups as entities. So this is also very much what we see through like identity politics, right? You have all these groups that become entities. They're not just it's how people identify, and they become an entity themselves. He claimed the group unconsciously allocates a particular function to particular individuals to have its covert individual needs met, but it's not necessarily benign or growth promoting. His work later is what got picked up by AKRI, so the A.K. Rice Institute, which is kind of like the American offshoot of Tavistock. They had their first conference in 1957 in London, but they are actually now based in the United States, and they are very much the kind of offshoot of Tavistock in the United States. And then here is a quote from them, "At the core of group relations work is an event known as the Group Relations Conference. This is an intensive participatory process that provides participants the opportunity to study their own behavior as it happens in real time, without the distractions of everyday social niceties and workplace pressures and protocols. In this unique environment, many often hidden aspects of our ways of being and working are brought to light and more consciously considered in terms of what supports our effectiveness and what detracts from it. Participants in our experiential conferences often report aha moments that can last for days, months, or years." So let's talk about the founding of the National Training Labs, which is really kind of the heart of where it just boomed, and it was really codified. And of course, it became an integral part of corporate life, as well as of education and of personal growth workshops. So it developed out of Kurt Lewin, and we talked about Kurt Lewin last time, right? He was one of those Frankfurt School refugees. He was a member of Frankfurt School. In 1933, he fled to become a pioneer of what they called action research. But he had pioneered this idea called field theory and topological psychology. And it was all about how people interact, again, in groups. But this idea that we are, total is greater than the parts, so that we are, as a group, we are greater than we are individually, and that we are very much impacted by experiences. And it's similar to like this Pavlovian methodology and belief system and methods that they were talking about in that video. So he was the founder for the Research Center for Group Dynamics at MIT. And MIT has many different offshoots that are very integral to this whole sensitivity training development. And the MIT Lewin's application of his background in Gestalt therapy. So this is, again, the study of kind of the whole versus the parts. And dehumanizing the capitalist workplace set the scene for the rise of human management theory. This is, again, all of the organizational psychology, organizational development that is, you know, basically human resources that is so integral to corporate life today. And personal experiences with anti-Semitism. He was actually a part of, and I'm blanking on the name of the organization that he was a part of, but they felt that he had this experience in dealing with race relations and diversity issues because of the anti-Semitism that he experienced and his role in this particular group, which I'm blanking on the name right now. But it gave him insight into America's fractured race relations. In time, his sensitivity training techniques were adopted by virtually every major mid-century U.S. corporation. So some of the ones they list this time were Kodak, Ford, Western Electric, Boeing, Procter & Gamble. But really, I think there's very few corporations that aren't incorporating this now. And, you know, again, the names might change these days, but it's still sensitivity training, sensitivity group training. He also established corporate group T group training or training group at the National Training Lab, and it was in Bethel, Maine, initially. His rose to social engineering could also be put to less conciliatory purposes. He was a consultant for the OSS, and he developed programs to help recruit spies. And this is actually really, really fascinating. There is a document, and you can find it on the CIA.gov site. I'm not sure if I can find it now, but it's called MICE. So it's an acronym, and it stands for, it's how they initially, during the beginning of the Cold War, and he was involved in developing these techniques for how you recruit spies. And so to recruit spies, assets, various kind of integral agents, if you will, they use this acronym, and it was called MICE. So it's money, ideology, coercion or compromise is the other one. Is this the, for those who are watching, this is the document. So coercion or compromise, and then E is ego. And we very much see this today. This is very much how a lot of controlled opposition works, right? They use these different aspects of humanity to exploit in order to lure people and to carve them into assets, essentially. And they changed it later. I think it was in the 80s to something called RASCAL. So it's a different acronym. They decided that was more useful. They needed to tailor it. But initially it was this MICE, and that MICE is still a part of it very much. And so he was a part of developing techniques with the OSS. So that was, and then it later goes into, so we can look at, I always say to look at their official, so maybe we'll just play the really short video from National Training Labs and look at their website. We'll look at that just so you can get a sense of what they say from the official word, if we have that video.
Welcome to the NTL Institute for Applied Behavioral Science. In 1947, our founders created the T Group Experiential Learning Methodology. For nearly seven decades, practitioners, professors, trainers, and coaches continue to rely on NTL's legacy. Our global membership provides unparalleled results, enabling organizational change around the world. NTL members facilitate open enrollment programs and professional consulting services rooted in applied behavioral science, organization development, change management, and professional coaching. Over 150,000 participants from over 1,300 organizations. Diversity and inclusion is a cornerstone value of our overall mission. Organization development is a planned process of changing the organization's culture, focused on human potential, participation, and the transfer of skill. In comparison, change management has a strong focus on cost, quality, and schedule. NTL courses open participants' eyes, ears, and hearts, gaining self-awareness. For many participants, they receive immediate and honest feedback about their own behaviors and interactions. Learn group process consulting and intervention strategies. We develop individual capabilities to apply new insights and skills to real organizational challenges. You will engage in hands-on experiences grounded in personal reflection and self-awareness. Experience NTL for yourself. Register for our Human Interaction Lab. Learn advanced skills through our OD certificate program. Consider NTL for your organization and yourself. Visit us at ntl.org.
All right. So there's actually a document from the CIA.gov that shows Kurt Lewin being recruit, like his application for the OSS, and that it was accepted. So you can find that. I don't know if I have that to pull it up right now, but I want to also read to you this Director of Medical Services document, because it's all about T groups and sensitivity training. Yeah, so this is the Kurt Lewin one. So you can see that they had his applicant for use as consultant by the OSS in connection with the operation of the Morale Operations Far East School. But this next one, I'm going to read it. I don't typically do that, but this is, it's pretty short, and it talks about how the CIA wouldn't use, they wanted to conduct a study on it, but that they wouldn't because it was too dangerous, because essentially it was Chinese Maoist brainwashing tactics. So this is, he says, T groups, encounter groups, sensitivity training, and groups, similar terms used to describe a variety of kinds of group experiences, which have certain elements in common. Carl Rogers, a leading proponent of this experience, has summarized in his book on encounter groups the common elements follows. The facilitator leader develops a psychological climate of safety in which freedom of expression and reduction of defensiveness gradually occur. In such psychological climate, many of the immediate feelings of reactions of each member towards others and of each member towards himself tend to be expressed. A climate of mutual trust develops out of this mutual freedom to express real feeling, positive and negative. Each member moves towards a greater acceptance of his total being, emotional, intellectual, and physical, as it is, including its potential. With individual less inhibited by defensive rigidity, the possibility of change in personal attitudes and behavior, in professional methods, in administrative procedures, and the relationships becomes less threatening. With the reduction of defensive rigidity, individuals can hear each other, can learn from each other to a greater extent. There is a development of feedback from one person to another, such as that individual learns how he appears to other and what impact he has in interpersonal relationships. With this greater freedom and improved communication, new ideas, new concepts, new directions emerge. Innovations can become desirable rather than threatening possibility. These learnings in group experience tend to carry over temporarily or more permanently into the relationships with the spouse, children, students, subordinates, peers, and even superiors following the group experience. An overwhelming majority of participants in such groups emerge with the conviction that they have benefited in some way from the experience. The extent to which alleged benefits are reflected in behavior observable to others is controversial. The extent to which persons are changed in ways judged harmful by others is also controversial. Beneficial results are emphasized and harmful effects minimized by those most active in the field, e.g. Carl Rogers. Criticism comes mostly from those not personally involved in the conduct of such groups. Some of the latter are people who, while outside the movement, have dealt with individuals, organizations who have used these methods extensively. They've redacted, as you can see, if you're watching. If not, you go look at the website, you will see they put a black mark and you cannot see who it is. They say, for example, has been highly critical. I have no idea who that is. Evaluation of effects of a specific program of this type in the agency could be undertaken. It would require a careful controlled study and would entail before and after measurement using both self-report data and descriptive behavioral data collected from peers, supervisors, and subordinates. If the agency were to proceed with training of this type, I would recommend that such a study be undertaken. A prior question, however, is whether on the basis of the present knowledge and professional judgment, a sensitivity training effort should go forward. My recommendation is negative for the following reasons. A, lack of evidence that such training results in behavioral change beneficial to the organization. B, evidence that some people are harmed by the experience. In making these judgments, I recognize that the self-reports of personal benefit tend to overwhelm the counsel of caution. I would point out that intensely emotionally involving group experience of any sort into a motion of a set group of dynamics that destroys objective individual judgment, a point illustrated most dramatically by brainwashing in China and less dramatically in a number of other intensive group experiences designed to produce attitude change. The very power of these techniques argues as strongly as any other specific evidence for proceeding with caution. The name is redacted, but Chief Psychological Service Staff, Office of Medical Services. And I can attest to having done these, they're very reminiscent of EST programs. They're, in the Esalen type programs, and they can be incredibly, incredibly traumatic. I do remember, I think I've talked a little bit about this before. My first experience, I knew from day one, I said that this is a communist brainwashing programming. When we would walk in and out in the beginning of each class or segment, they would have us all hold hands and they would play the song Imagine, John Lennon. And then the same thing when we walked out. It was very much, and they would put us through these very traumatic kind of role-playing things, which is really all about taking your own mental construct and weaponizing it against people. These are the S trainings. They were an organization founded by Werner Erhard in 1971, and it was a two-weekend, 6-day, 60-hour course, typically known as the S standard training. And the purpose was to help people recognize the situations which seem to be holding them back in their life and working themselves out within the process of itself. The seminar aimed to transform one's abilities to experience living so that the situations that one had been trying to change had been putting up with clear up just in the process of life itself. And I will tell you that that's kind of how they sell these things. They tell you, you know, that you're being held back and you're not reaching your full potential, right? This comes out of the human potential movement. This was also Abraham Maslow, which was the self-actualization. This is all related. It was Will Schultz who played a key role in bringing this sensitivity training to Esalen, which was in Big Sur. He was helping the U.S. Navy to identify individuals who could manage the intense groups isolations of a nuclear-powered submarine. He created this model. It was called FIRO, Fundamental Interpersonal Relations Orientation, and it was for predicting the human interaction. He was instrumental in bringing this to Esalen. I'm going to read you one more if we can bring. I know we're running out of time, so I might do part two on this, but the document, it was called the Esalen Hot Tub Document. And it was really all about bringing, like, essentially that sex, drugs, and rock and roll were going to somehow create diplomacy. I was hoping I could zoom in and make this bigger, but I'm not going to be able to read this. So, but it was Esalen's Hot Tub Diplomacy. And the takeaway, you can go look it up and maybe you can zoom in for yourself. There are lots of articles on it. I mean, this is a Newsweek article, but it's good to read the actual document itself. It was, pretty interesting. And it talks about, I'm just not going to be able to read it. It's way, way too small. But anyway, the takeaway was essentially that somehow, the sex, drugs, and rock and roll and lots of drugs were going to, be able to create the diplomacy and bring about world peace. And yeah, if we can, this was, I think this was in the late 60s, CIA document. So it was, yeah, a human resource seminar in Moscow, Dente, California style, Soviet Union, Esalen's hot tub diplomacy, tense California style. It's been called hot tub diplomacy as most unofficial U.S.-Soviet contacts have waned in recent years. One back channel has survived, an unorthodox informal exchange program developed under the auspices of the Esalen Institute, the Big Sur base mecca of the human potential movement. In the past decade, a dozen Esalen enthusiasts have been journeyed to the Soviet Union to compare notes on such topics as parapsychology, herbal medicine. We're seeing this today, right? They're really trying to push it. I mean, of course, they did this in the 60s, counterculture. We're seeing a whole resurgence of this, really trying to push psychedelics. And I think it's all tied to this agenda. It's all about, you know, brainwashing and creating this oneism, which is the religion, you know, the theosophical underpinnings of the UN that they're trying to usher into this one world religion with this AI cyber Satan God. In my opinion, that's what it looks like. In the past decade, dozen Esalen enthusiasts have journeyed to the Soviet Union to compare and such as parapsychology, herbal medicine. Esalen leaders are invited Soviet scientists, bureaucrats to California. So far, the exchanges haven't done much to ease the East-West tensions, but they generated some good vibrations. The word Esalen is Hein in the scenes to facilitate more visits. The exchange network blossomed quickly, and I will let you read the rest of it yourself, but you get the gist that essentially, and this is straight from the CIA. So yeah, maybe we can dive more into what's going on with today, but this is really the underpinning of so much of the corporate woke agenda, and it really is brainwashing. That's what this is all about. They called it brainwashing themselves. So I hope that was interesting. I hope that, you know, gives you kind of a sense of how we got to this weird kind of corporate culture today. And I went to a, like, you know, corporate kind of conference, and my takeaway when I left was, wow, they're corporate America. You know, it's possible around the world too, but that was my experience. Corporate America is single-handedly ushering the new world order. So you can find, you know, the rest of my work at CourtneyTurner.com. And that, again, I spell my name like Courtney. So it's CourtneyTurner.com. And you can find all of my podcasts, and you can find all the great ways to support me there. The Give, Send, Go. You can buy me a coffee. You can send me a Venmo. Or you can find products that you like there. And the code is Quartz on all of them to get your discounts. And that's Courtz. And thank you so much for watching and for listening. And I hope that, you know, you enjoyed it, and we will continue. I think we'll do some more of this topic. We're definitely going to talk more about Tavistock. So, and check the rest of the episodes.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.